Chapter 18. I settled Embot into place on the top of our embassy on Starsight, then sat back in my seat, suddenly exhausted. Being Alanik was taxing. I was accustomed to just going with my gut and doing what seemed natural for me. It had gotten me through life well so far. I'd admittedly earned the occasional bumper scrape, but I'd never had to worry about pretending to be someone other than myself. I sighed, finally hitting the canopy release and standing up to stretch. The embassy didn't have a ground crew to pull over steps for me, so I climbed out onto the wing, then hopped down. "Overall," Embot said to me, "I think that went well. We're not dead, and you actually managed to get into their military." "By the skin of my teeth," I said, grimacing as I remembered the Burl gorilla alien who had thrown the tantrum and been kicked out. That would have been me if I had gotten to Winzik a tad earlier. "Do your teeth have skin?" Embot asked. "I don't think so," I said, walking over and hooking up Embot's charging cords and network link. Not sure where the saying comes from, actually. "Hmm. Oh, well, it's from an English version of the Bible. That's a really antiquated version of the Book of Saints from Old Earth." I got the last cord hooked up, then traipsed down the steps. Doomslug trilled at me excitedly from the bedroom when I checked on her. I'd set up a litter box for her and some chopped mushrooms, which, judging by the crumbs left, she'd found acceptable as a meal. I gave her a scratch, then noted a little light on the wall. It was blinking, indicating that I had a delivery, so I tromped down to the bottom floor and checked the delivery box. Before flying out this morning, I'd made a few orders to test my requisition abilities. Inside the box, I found a bundle of new clothing in my size, along with some toiletries. I grabbed everything and headed up to the kitchen, where I fried a small algae patty and ate it in a bun. Then I walked back to my bathroom. It was still a little strange that I had one all to myself. Scud. I had this entire building all to myself. Well, myself and my pet slug, who insisted I give her another head scratch as I passed her in the hall. In the bathroom's mirror, I looked at myself, or the illusion of Alanik that I wore. Doomslug doesn't notice I'm not wearing my real face, I thought. She obviously worked by scent and sound, as she didn't have eyes. It hit me that my disguise was even more tenuous than I thought. What about that creature Vapor, who was a scent? Did I have to worry she'd know I was human? I groaned softly, feeling weighed down. I flipped off the lights, then, with a sigh of relief, took off my hologram bracelet. Though Embot had scanned the place for spy devices, I wanted to be extra careful, so I kept the bracelet on at all times. For now, I wanted to be myself. Even in the dark, even alone, even for just a little while. I cleansed, and it felt luxurious to not be pressed for time. Back on Detritus, it seemed I had always been running to some training exercise or another. Here, though, I could simply rest and let the pod's cleansing agents wash me. I finally pulled myself out, then sighed and put the bracelet back on. I turned on the light and pulled a set of loose, generic clothing from my bundle. They looked kind of like the scrubs that medical personnel wore. I figured these would make good all-purpose work or sleeping clothing. I sorted through the toiletries. Hopefully, the people watching my requisition orders wouldn't wonder why I'd forgotten my toothpaste. Though I'd checked with Embot before ordering everything, I still had an amusing time looking over the warning label on the back of the tube. My pin translated the words, and it listed which species in the galaxy would find the toothpaste toxic. Running a galactic empire seemed to carry a lot of strange problems I'd never considered. Brushing my teeth in front of the mirror, I found the toothpaste actually had a nice minty taste to it, way better than the bitter stuff we used back home. Such were apparently the benefits of having an actual economy and infrastructure, instead of being forced to repurpose ancient biorefineries to manufacture toothpaste. My hair was longer than I used to keep it, and was fortunately about the length of Alanik's, inching past my shoulders. I'd kept it short when I'd been young, partially because I'd hated the color. Heroes from Gran-Gran's stories had all had raven black hair or golden flax hair, maybe the occasional fire scarlet color thrown in for variety. Nobody in those tales had dirty brown hair. It was white now, though, with the hologram on. I ran my fingers through it, and the illusion really was perfect, with each individual strand recolored. My expressions also mapped quite well to Alanique's face, and I couldn't feel anything different when I poked my skin, though I knew that my features and hers weren't the same. The only things that were off were the bone ridges Alanique had under her eyes and along the sides of her face. Those were pure illusion, and if I stuck my finger into them, the hologram distorted. Still, the bracelet was good enough to make my hair seem to brush against the ridges, instead of clipping through the center of them when the two touched. I stared at myself in the mirror, smiling, frowning, trying to find some error in the way it all looked. But it was an excellent illusion. I could almost believe I was wearing makeup. It was no surprise when I found myself thinking about Alanique. Had she worried about how to fit her hair into her helmet? What would she think of me imitating her? Don't trust their peace, their lies. I brushed my hair, then trailed out into the hall and down the stairs to my bedroom.
Ah, Embot said to me. You'll be interested to read this. We've just received a communication back from Alanique's people, sent, supposedly, via secure but unmonitored superiority channels.
I don't doubt for a moment that they read it anyway, I said, settling down at the bedroom's desk. Let's see what it says. Embot displayed the message at the desk's workstation, translated to English. It gave a bland response to our bland rundown of events, which was promising. It didn't seem they'd immediately contacted the superiority. And is there an encrypted hidden message, like the one we sent?
Yes, Embot said. It's a very interesting cipher, based on the number of letters in each word, mapped to a one-time pad message with the key in your PIN. Completely unbreakable without the PIN. I guess that's more than what you want to know. Anyway, the encrypted message simply says, we want to speak to Alanique.
Send back a report on today's test, and in code, she will contact you when she is well. For now, I am embedded among the superiority, imitating her. Please do not give me away.
Sounds like a reasonable response, Embot said. I will construct that message.
I nodded, walking to the bed. I really needed some sleep. And yet, when I thought about lying down, I realized that I wasn't tired. So I settled into a chair beside the window instead and looked down the skyscraper-lined street of Starsight. I watched all those people out there move, flow, a million different goals, a million different jobs, a million creatures who saw me as one of the most dangerous things in the galaxy. Embot, I asked, can you hear those people down below? On the street?
Not sure, he said. That was a lie. I can totally hear them. How was my lie, though?
Try not to tell people that you're lying immediately after you do it. It ruins the effect.
Right. Okay, then. Not sure.
He started humming. Could you maybe not practice your lying right now? It's getting a little annoying.
Spencer, he said. You're not supposed to like it when I lie, right? How do you know when to do it and when not to?
I sighed.
All right, fine, he said. I have advanced surveillance equipment. From this height, I might be able to isolate audio from people on the street, though it's no guarantee and will depend on interference. Why?
I just want to know what they talk about, I said. There aren't any Krell raids for them to anticipate. Do they talk about manufactory jobs? About the humans? Maybe the Delvers?
I'm scanning for a sampling, Embot said. It seems for now, they talk about normal things. Picking their kids up from care centers. Ordering ingredients for dinner. The health and training of their pets.
Normal things,
I repeated. Is all of that normal? That seems like it would depend on a large number of variables. I stared down, watching everyone move. The people walking past displayed that same lack of urgency I'd noticed when I'd first flown in. This place was busy, but only because there were so many pieces moving at once. Individually, it was peaceful. Normal? No, I couldn't believe it. This was the superiority, the empire that had practically destroyed humankind. They were the ones who funded Winzik and his Krell domination of my people. These were the monsters I'd spent my life training to fight, the faceless creatures who had lurked in the sky, bombing our civilization centers and bringing us nearly to extinction. Starsight was one of their primary trade and political hubs. This place had to be a front intended to make it seem like life in their empire was peaceful. How many of those people passing on the street were in the superiority's employ, directed to act innocent? It seemed so obvious, now that I thought about it. This was an act, a way to give outsiders a false impression of how great the empire was. Well, I wouldn't believe their lies of peace and prosperity. I'd seen how they treated the pilots at the test today. All those people on the street, they were culpable for what had been done to my father and my friends. These weren't just simple people going about their simple lives. They were my enemies. We were at war. Spensa, Embot said. Not to be a nag, but it has currently been 15 hours since you have slept, and, as you're adjusting to this station's sleep cycle, I recorded only 4 hours of actually restful sleep for you last night. Yeah, so? I snapped. You get cranky if you don't sleep. No, I don't. Do you mind if I record your tone for later, to use as evidence against you in a future disagreement? Scud. Arguing with a machine was an unreal level of frustrating. He was probably right, but I also knew I wouldn't be able to sleep if I tried. For reasons that he, no matter how smart, would never be able to understand. Instead, I changed into the generic work jumpsuit that had arrived in that bundle of clothes I'd ordered, and went back up to the rooftop. The jumpsuit felt like a flight suit, thick, canvas-like material with a fit that was snug, but not too tight. Comfortable, utilitarian clothing. The best kind. Spensa, Embot said as I walked over to the ship. You're not going to get yourself into trouble somehow, are you? We aren't flying off to— Relax, I said. We can't let their ground crews get too close to you, which means I'm going to have to keep you maintained. Now, Embot said. I want you in tip-top shape, in case we need to make an escape. I checked the little maintenance locker on the rooftop and found some basic supplies, including a grease gun filled with vacuum-rated lubricant. I grabbed that and walked back to him. Embot, I asked. How did you learn about that phrase I used? About the teeth. Did you have it in your databases? No, he said. I got it from the Starsight Information Archive. There's a great deal in here about old Earth, from before it vanished, more than the fragmented databases your people have. Can you tell me about it? I asked, using the gun to begin greasing the joints of his wing flaps. Some of the things we don't cover in school, you know? There's a lot of information here, he said. Shall I just start in alphabetical order? A.A. Atanasio was a science fiction writer who sounds interesting. Tell me the story of Pineleaf, I said, and how she fought 4 crow warriors at once. Fallen Leaf, Embot said, is often associated with the historical figure known as Pineleaf, or Woman Chief. She was a Native American woman of Gros-Ventre birth, though many pseudo-historical accounts of bravery are associated with her life. He said it so dryly, in such a monotone. And the story of how she fought 4 men at once? I asked, touching them each with her rod in turn, taking them captive due to the shame of letting a woman outfence them. She is reported to have counted coup 4 times in 1 battle, Embot said, though it is uncertain if this legend is true. Historically, she was instrumental in turning back a Blackfoot raid, where she first gained renown among other Crow. And why are you sighing? Did I do something wrong?
I just miss Gran-Gran, I said softly. She made the stories of Old Earth come alive, simply in the way she told them. There was always a passion in her voice that M'Bot, however well-intentioned, couldn't impart.
I'm sorry, M'Bot said softly. This is more proof that I'm not really alive, isn't it?
Don't be silly, I said. I'm not a very good storyteller either. That doesn't mean I'm not alive.
The Dion philosopher and scientist Zentu claimed that there are three important hallmarks that indicate true life. Growth is the first. The being must change over time. I've changed, haven't I? I can learn. I can grow.
Definitely, I said. The mere fact that you made me your pilot proves that.
Basic self-determinism is the second, M'Bot said. A living thing has to be able to respond to stimuli to better its situation. I can't fly myself. If I could fly, do you think it would make me alive? Do you think that's why whoever created me forbade me from being able to move on my own?
You can use your smaller thrusters to adjust your position, I said. So you can kind of do that one already. If a plant is alive because it can respond to sunlight, then you're alive.
I don't want to be as alive as a plant, M'Bot said. I want to be really alive.
I grunted, applying quick squirts of lubricant to the hinges of his wing flaps. The mere scent of it made me feel better. That room down below, it was too clean. Even my quarters back at DDF headquarters had smelled faintly of grease and exhaust fumes.
What's the third indication of life? I asked, at least according to this philosopher. Reproduction, M'Bot said. A living thing is capable of making more versions of itself, or at least its species is capable of this at some point in its life cycle. I've been wondering. You're going to have to fly a new ship tomorrow. Maybe we can find a way to upload a copy of my program to that fighter's databanks. Then you could have my help, but still be able to fly one of their ships.
You could do that? I asked, looking up from the wing.
In theory, M'Bot said. I'm just a program, granted, one that relies on trans-cytonic speeds for processing. But at my core, the thing you call M'Bot is nothing more than a group of coded bits.
You're way more, I said. You're a person.
A person is nothing more than an organic collection of coded information.
He hesitated.
Anyway, my programming forbids me from making copies of my main processing code. There's a failsafe to prevent me from duplicating myself. I might be able to change it if...
Click. Click, 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 click. I kept working, falling silent as his program rebooted. Whoever made him didn't want to risk the enemy getting a copy of him, I thought. Or they didn't want to risk their AIs copying themselves without supervision.
I'm back, M'Bot finally said. Sorry.
It's fine, I said.
Maybe we can find a way around what I said earlier.
I don't know if I like that, honestly, I said. Making another of you feels wrong, weird.
No more weird than identical twin human beings, he said. To be perfectly frank, I don't know how my programming would respond to being confined in an ordinary computer system, one that doesn't have trans-cytonic processing.
You say those words like I should know what they mean.
To create computers that can think as quickly as my mind, you need processors that can communicate faster than normal electric signals facilitate. My design achieves this by using tiny cytonic communicators, which pass signals at FTL speeds through my processing units.
And the station's shield doesn't stop that?
My own shielding appears to be enough to block their shielding. Or, well, that's a simplified and maybe contradictory way of putting it. In any case, I can still process at my required speeds.
Huh, I said. Cytonic processors. So that's why I can feel you thinking.
What do you mean? Sometimes, when I'm deep inside, whatever it is I do, I can feel you. Your mind, your processors. Like I can feel Braid sometimes. But anyway, talk of copying you is moot, right? We can't transfer you to a new ship, because that ship wouldn't be able to think fast enough. I should be able to survive in one, Embot said. I'd simply think slower. I'd be dumb. Not as dumb as a human, though, and you all seem to get along just fine. He paused. No offense. I'm sure you find our stupidity endearing. Nope. Anyway, I'd like to at least try to find a way to replicate myself, if just to prove that I'm actually alive. I walked around him toward his other wing, smiling. After I'd joined the DDF officially, and Embot had come out into the open, the ground crews had taken over maintaining him. Before that, though, it had just been me and Raj. Raj had done most of the difficult work, but a lot of the simple jobs, greasing, peeling paint, checking wires, he'd given over to me. There was something satisfying about maintaining my own ship, something relaxing, calming. Then I looked into the polished surface of his hull and saw infinity staring back at me. A deep void in place of my reflection, one pierced by a handful of burning white lights, like terrible suns, watching me. The eyes. A Delver, or more than one, was here. Right here. I stumbled back, dropping the grease gun with a clatter. The reflection vanished, and I swear there was nothing reflected for a short time. Then, like a screen turning on, Alanik's figure reappeared, the holographic image I was wearing. Spensa, Embot asked, what's wrong? I slumped down to the rooftop. Overhead, ships coursed along invisible highways. The city squirmed and moved, a sickening buzz of annoying insects all around, suffocating me. Spensa, Embot repeated. I'm all right, I whispered. I'm just worried about tomorrow, about having to fly without you. I felt alone. Embot was great, but he didn't understand me like Kimmelin or FM did, or Jorgen. Scud, I missed him. I missed being able to complain to him and listen to his overly rational, yet somehow calming, arguments back. Don't worry, Spensa, Embot said. You can do this. You're really good at flying. Better than anyone else. You're practically inhuman in your skill. I felt a chill at that. Practically inhuman. Feeling sick, I leaned forward, wrapping my arms around my legs. What did I say? Embot asked, his voice growing smaller. Spensa, what's wrong? What's really wrong? There's a story Gran-Gran would tell, I whispered. An odd one that never quite fit with the others. Not a story about queens, knights, or samurai. A story about a man who lost his shadow. How do you lose your shadow? Embot asked. It was a fanciful story, I said, remembering the first time Gran-Gran had told it to me. Sitting on top of our cube-like apartment back in the caverns, the deep, hungry light of the forges painting everything red. One strange evening, while on a journey, a rider woke up to find that his shadow had vanished. There was nothing he could do, and no doctor could help him. Eventually, he moved on with his life. Except one day, the shadow came back. It knocked on the door and greeted its former master with joy. It had traveled the world and had come to understand men better, in fact, than the writer himself did. The shadow had seen the evil in the hearts of the men of the land, while the writer had sat beside his hearth, entertaining only kind-hearted fancies. That's strange, Embot said. Didn't your grandmother usually tell you stories about slaying monsters? Sometimes, I whispered. The monsters slew the men. In this story, the shadow took the man's place. It persuaded the writer that it could show him the world, but only if the man agreed to become the shadow for a short time. And of course, when the man did so, the shadow refused to let him go free. The shadow took his place, married a princess, and became wealthy, while the real man, being a shadow, wasted away and became thin and dark, barely alive. I looked back at Embot. I always wondered why she told me that story. She said it was a story her mother had told her during the days when they'd traveled the stars.
So, you're worried about what? Embot said. That your shadow might take your place.
No, I whispered. I worry that I'm already the shadow. I closed my eyes, thinking of where the Delvers lived, the place between moments, that cold nowhere. Gran-Gran said that in the old days, people had feared and distrusted the engine crew. They distrusted Cytonics. Ever since I'd begun seeing the eyes, I'd never quite felt the same. Now that I'd traveled to the nowhere, I couldn't help wondering if what had come back wasn't completely me anymore, or if maybe the me I'd known had always been something else, something not quite human.
Spensa, Embot said, you said you weren't a good storyteller. That was a lie. I'm impressed at how you do it so easily.
I looked at the fallen grease gun, which had squirted a little glob of clear lubricant onto the rooftop. Scud. I was getting emotional. Embot really was right. I got strange when I didn't have enough sleep. That was it, obviously. Sleep deprivation was making me hallucinate, and it was why I was rambling. I stood up, pointedly did not look at my reflection, and put away the grease gun. I then stopped at the stairwell down into the embassy. The thought of sleeping in that sterile, empty room, with the eyes watching me. Hey, I said to Embot instead. Pop your cockpit. I'm going to sleep up here tonight.
You have an entire building with 4 bedrooms, Embot said. And you're going back to sleeping in my cockpit, like you did when you were forbidden DDF quarters?
Yep, I said, yawning as I climbed in and pulled the canopy closed. Could you dim the canopy for me?
I suspect a bed might be more comfortable, Embot said.
Probably would be. I leaned the seat back and dug out my blanket. Then I settled in, listening to the noise of traffic outside, a strange, somehow accusatory sound. Even as I began to drift off, I was left with a sense of isolation, surrounded by noise, but alone. I was in a place with 1,000 species, but I felt more lonely than I ever had exploring the caverns at home.